they begin to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
We look down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing. We
fired our... Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk, 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour on this Friday morning. What's left of this Friday morning, I should say. 251-343-0106. Joining us now, our returning champion, and having to play cleanup duty, very tough lineup of, ahead of him with Senator Brubaker and Josh Moon, but our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott, I am sure was up to the task. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, fired up and ready to go after that lineup.
I can imagine. Firstly, you were listening to Senator Brubaker talk about the LCS program, and I give you the opportunity to respond. I would weigh in, but I kind of defer to the experts in this matter. But the LCS program, what do you make of that criticism?
Well, I'm not going to hold myself out to be a national security expert as a state senator.
Right.
And I think that might go well for all state senators. But I think that having the opportunity to have a great portion of the workforce that works at AUSL and having been involved and knowledgeable about the LCS programs from the very beginning would probably position me a little bit better to talk about the many crucial roles that the LCS fills, whether you're talking about forward presence, deterrence, sea control, power projection, and maritime security. The threats we are facing across the globe right now, whether it be in the South China Sea, the Persian Gulf, the Indian Ocean from pirates, the Persian Gulf from Iranian fast attack boats, and the South China Sea from Chinese aggression. These are smaller surface combatants than what we've been dealing with before, and having a fleet that's able to respond quickly, nimbly, and effectively is so much more efficient than much higher cost warships that are, frankly, way too much bang for the buck. We need to be looking at cost-effective ways to be effective in the world's waters across the globe instead of these big lumbering ships that the Navy's known for.
Well, that's all valid, but I will tell you just my experience when I get away from Mobile and I talk about the LCS program, particularly with these guys that do this for a living. You know how the defense contractor world is. Not a lot of kind things being said about the LCS program. Is there maybe a perception problem there that needs to be corrected?
Well, I think that's a fair point. I will tell you that anytime you shake up the military-industrial complex a little bit and come out with a new concept of how to accomplish the mission, you're going to ruffle some feathers, right? They're going to be entrenched. Folks that build these ships across the country, the bigger ships, that don't want a smaller surface combatant, that don't want a low-cost surface combatant, that don't want something that goes 55 knots and has the ability to land a V-22 Osprey and, has all kinds of modular mission components that can be put on it. They want the status quo, and I think that's what you're seeing with a lot of the criticisms here. We are no longer the battleship Navy, right? We are. That's not what we do anymore. And it's time to change that thinking away from that and get into some more innovative thinking, some more cost-effective thinking. And I think that's what the LCS program has achieved. Now, of course, many point to a lot of the other class, right? The Freedom class that had some problems
right.
That was built up in Marionette. And that's just not the case with most of the AUSL ships. Of course, the Independence class, the first in class ship, was meant really as a test bed. It is correct that it's being decommissioned right now. It was always intended to be a test bed for that class, but the others in that class have gone on and will go on to serve with distinction in hotbed areas or deployed and doing the mission we need them to do.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. But and you said you're not a national security expert, and I don't expect you to play one on the radio. But it does seem the threat has changed, though. Would you acknowledge that we are and you know, it may be not be overtly said that China is the threat, but that to me seems to be where the smart money would be if you're looking at possible adversaries.
No question about it, and that's why the vast majority of our LCSs that are currently in service are deployed in the South China Sea region. They are deployed in the Far East to maintain forward presence. You know, that fleet, the way they do that is they've got a blue and gold crew rotation, and those ships are always out. And you gotta wonder, Jeff, when you start dealing with threats from folks like China and other non-nation state actors, is having one big ship out there the answer, or is having a dozen smaller surface combatants out there that have everything from anti-drone capabilities, anti-missile capabilities, can launch their own missiles, have anti-submarine warfare, anti-mine capabilities? And my answer would be that having a greater number of smaller, faster, more capable ships is the way to go to combat the threats from folks like China and the South China Sea.
But the appeal of the carrier fleets, and there's a track record there, that we've, you know, America, part of America's strength is we control the seas. And given as such that we control the seas, I guess there is, you know, there needs to be at least some balance there, I suppose. But you're not totally dismissive of the deep water Navy, right?
Oh, no, not at all. And I've had the ability to be on a carrier before on the Roosevelt, and land on that flight deck, and it is an impressive piece of machinery. And I'm glad that we have those carriers across the globe, and they are absolutely an important part of United States Navy and United States government force protection, no question about it. But having the nimbleness and the agility that comes with having smaller surface combatants is a must as well. And we can have more presence in more places if we have that in our pocket as well.
Senator, let's move on to other things. I don't know if you've been listening to the entirety of the show, but Josh Moon, I know you're a big fan of. I religiously read his work. But he makes, I think, a somewhat compelling argument that Alabama's lags in all the metrics, at least we were told that are the important metrics of dealing with COVID-19. Now, he argues it's an indictment of conservative government. I think instinctively I would say, well, I don't think that is. I don't think what we're seeing out of Montgomery is probably a textbook conservative approach to the pandemic. But that to me right now is compelling, in that a lot of people that are in charge, they ran on a conservative platform, they proclaimed to be conservatives, and there just seem to be, you know, a lot of struggles right now. What do you make of that argument?
Well, if the response, you know, heretofore has been a conservative response, you've got me. I mean, you had, in my opinion, a large-scale government overreaction to this at the very beginning, not necessarily from the masking standpoint, but from the government shutdown standpoint, ordering small businesses, mom-and-pop shutdown with little or no scientific reason to do so. Closing private property, the beaches down here, things of that nature. That's anything but conservative. That big government, heavy-handed, non-conservative, right, types of action. So if that's what Josh is seeing as conservative, I just have to disagree on that. I will say, and I am pleased that the governor has indicated that she is not going to put us back under a state of emergency. That she is not going to reissue orders that were largely ineffective, clearly, and probably not followed by a large part of the population initially. Anyway, she is correct in saying, and I will back her up on this, something I don't always do on the show, right? But that is to go get the vaccine. That's the solution to this. Is get the vaccine. Go talk to your doctor. If your doctor says it's okay and a good idea for you, then get the vaccine. That is the solution. But we still have freedom in this state, and we still have the free will that God gave us. And at the end of the day, that's something I'll fight for every day. It's your decision to do what you want to do with your health, even if it's not something that the experts say is the right decision. it's still your decision to make. Now, I think you should listen to your doctor, but it's still your decision. And that's something we need to make sure that the folks at Alabama understand.
Well, could something have been done differently, I guess? And I know it seems to be a reoccurring theme. Like, what more could government do? Is it a matter of vaccines? Is it a matter of more protocol, motivating people to get the vaccine? I'm at a loss here, but my fear would be that you're going to create a narrative, if you don't get a handle on this, that becomes a talking point for those that want more heavy-handed government.
Well, I think that just goes back to principle, and government is not always the solution to every problem. You know, sometimes government is the problem, and I think that when you look at the response to this, an overreaction early on, really, I think, fueled a equal response on the other side, and that was a pushback against government mandates, a pushback against what the government was asking people to do. And that is an issue we face across government all the time. I've likened it to hurricane evacuations before. If you overreact every time you have the threat of a hurricane, then when you actually have the storm that you've got to get everybody out for, you've got to make sure folks are listening to you. And I'm afraid that we overreacted early on, a lot of the mandates and the closures and everything else, and now you're seeing a response where everybody goes, I'm just not going back there again. I'm just not doing it. I'm not doing any of this. I've had it. And that is a problem. I think at this point, though, it is up to individuals to make individual decisions for themselves and their families on what's best for them. And I think that's what we're going to see happen in Alabama. I do not see a return to a shutdown regime.
Do you think the politics have poisoned the well, though? I don't know where you are on vaccines other than you support people's choice. I mean, personally, I've been vaccinated, just to get that out there, and no shame in for me to say that. But that if the idea is to get more shots in arms, if you think that is the right approach, some people don't think it is, but I guess I would argue probably is. I don't know, but if your objective is that, but then you have the political circumstances where the unvaccinated see it as just a big government, big corporate sort of effort, that are better yet, you turn on TV at night and then you watch CNN and you stupid Trump supporters out there don't know what's good for you. That's going to deter more people. I mean, but that's kind of the hand we've been dealt. How do you overcome that?
Well, I think that's the challenge of being an elected official, politician, if you will, is to understand the electorate. And in Alabama, the electorate does not like to be told what to do. Give them the facts, let them make their own decisions. But if you try to force them, if you talk down to them, then the response is going to be negative. And I think that's what we're seeing here. An overreaction, talking down to folks, telling them what they must do, mandate, forced closures. It makes the folks in Alabama chafe. We are a free people. We are a free-thinking people. We are going to make up our own decision. A much better way, and some of this is Monday morning quarterbacking, admittedly. But some of this, if you just look back and say, if we handled this differently, if we handled this is the suggestion, or this is the way we probably ought to have, this could be some of the results, et cetera. I think Alabamians would have come along, as opposed to what happened was trying to push them. And we're seeing a very negative response to that.
Yeah. So, well, do you think that maybe that is one of the misgivings here? And you look at, you know, the way the state health officer and the governor, could they have taken a different rhetorical approach, maybe?
You know, I think right now, looking at it, the answer is yes. Now, in fairness, I think it's reasonable to say that the governor and the state health officer did not know what was in front of us. They did not know that we had a Delta variant, a highly contagious Delta variant coming that was going to spread rapidly. But that's also one of those things that you don't always know that as an elected official. And you've got to, if you will, keep some of your powder dry. You've got to understand the electorate. You've got to understand the people you're trying to govern. And forcing them to do something, you know, these weekly or semi-weekly press conferences, locking things down, just chafed people to the point where they said, no, I'm not doing it, I'm not following your order, I'm not going to do what you're telling me to do. And that's a dangerous place for elected officials to be in. If you're telling people to do things and they're not listening to you, that's a problem. And I'm afraid that's what we've got right now. People should go talk to their doctors. That's my message. People that are eligible and are healthy and are able to get the vaccine should do so. They just got to make their own choice. They shouldn't do it because I'm telling them to do it. They shouldn't do it because Scott Harris is telling them. They shouldn't do it because the governor is suggesting they do it. They should do it because their doctor and has discussed it with them, and they've decided to do it.
I mean, is some of this just this, that those in positions of authority, in positions of power, they tend to gravitate toward having kind of a low regard for the intellect of people to figure things out. That it's not as much as the art of persuasion as it is, you know, just finding the right voice to tell them what to do. And I think that is just misguided in a lot of ways.
Well, I would certainly agree with that. And look, we've seen that to be the case, right? I mean, if you've got the mainstream media telling you this is what you need to do, you've got the elected officials telling you you should do this, you've got, you know, these celebrities, and why in the world anybody listen to what a celebrity is telling you to do about public health is beyond me, but you've got them telling you what to do. I don't think any of that matters. I think the voice that matters is your medical profession, and that ought to be the voice you're listening to every single time. So my advice, and I think what the state's advice ought to be, is not you should go get this shot. My advice is you should go talk to your medical professional about your particular conditions and whether or not you should take the vaccine.
Senator, we're out of time. We got to leave it there. But as always, we appreciate your time, and we'll do it again next week.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend.
State Senator Chris Elliott there, our returning champion. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Be proud, and you can be proud.